Well, good morning, everybody. Good to see you here today. Last week, we started on this series on refocus, and Timothy did a great job in launching that off for us and talking about pursuing Jesus together. It is a group activity. It's not a Lone Ranger activity to grow in discipleship or grow in character. You know, when I first began to try to cut my teeth on this whole idea of discipleship, I began to learn that from Leroy Imes. He was vice president of the Navigators, and I found the Navigators in those days were the best of discipleship that I could find anywhere. So I called him, and I spent some time with him learning discipleship. He told me one time, you know, the greatest challenge we have in discipleship is we have people that get in groups, and they go through material and lessons. And when they get through with the lesson, they want to turn around and go through another lesson. And they become professional Bible study attenders. And it does not change their life. And I noticed that when we began to have discipleship groups. And I remember that we used Master Life. I don't know if you've ever heard of Master Life or not. But it's about 13 weeks of study together. And I thought, this is the greatest thing. We had groups going through the discipleship and Master Life and Learn to Be Disciples. They'd take their notebook. And I had a wake-up call when I had one couple. I thought, they are doing so good. They're growing, and they were talking about growing. Won't you know, right after they finished the discipleship group, they got a divorce. And I thought, what is going on here? It doesn't look like that did much in changing their character. So discipleship is more than gaining knowledge. It's more than a Bible study. It is more than just talking about the Bible or even learning about the Bible. It's about transformation. It is about change. It is about becoming. He wants us to become something. And that's a constant thing. How often does a guitar player need to retune their guitar? I don't know if you ever noticed up here on the stage that even during a song sometimes, they're tweaking or retuning. In discipleship, it's a constant work of refocus, because we tend to get off focus and we need to refocus. Refocus on becoming. It's not just a mental activity of learning things. It has become something in character. So what we find today in this passage that was read a moment ago is that Jesus takes these ridiculous questions that James and John ask, and he uses it as a lesson to teach them. Even though they act a very ridiculous question, he shows them more about what it is to refocus, because they'd certainly got off focus, refocus on becoming what God had made them to be. So I want us to look at four lessons I think we'll find from this. And by the way, do you have your journals open there? You ready to go? A pen ready to go? Okay. And if you don't have a journal, it's all your fault because we handed them out just a moment ago. So if you don't have one, you can still slip back there and get them. They're on the table there. And I assure you, this is the most discouraging thing to a pastor there is when we get finished with this message this morning, you're going to remember maybe half of it the time you get to your car. And I've worked all week on this thing. And by next week, what was the main point that Timothy had for us last week? Can anybody tell me? Oh, did he preach last week? But I'll tell you one thing. If you take notes, it goes a long way in helping you remember and then to apply that and then use it through the week. And it's great to be in a group that goes ahead and talks about that, and then how do you apply that to your life? So, okay, you ready? Four lessons. Number one is refocus. First of all, refocus on the right things in life. And James and John were not focused on the right things. Look at it. It says in verse 35, and James and John, sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus and said to him, Teacher, we want you to do, in other words, do us a big favor. We wanted you to do a favor. And then Jesus was gracious and said, well, what do you want me to do? And this is a ridiculous request. Said, grant to us that one of us can sit on your right hand and one on the left in your kingdom. They were thinking that he was going to come and be the king that would overthrow Rome. And we'd like to be one on your right hand, one on your left. Now, you'd think Jesus would reprimand them for that. But he uses it at his teaching time. And he had just, what makes this so ridiculous, if you read the passage just before that, Jesus said, they're on their way to Jerusalem, and he's been telling them about when we get to Jerusalem, I'm going to be confronted by the religious people, and in that confrontation, I am going to be beaten and abused and spit upon, and they will kill me. You would think that would sober them up. Right after Jesus just told them, what did they do? Would you do us a favor? If I'd have been Jesus, I'd have slapped them one on the side and one on the other. That's where I'd have set them, you know. But Jesus used this as a teaching time. And their focus is on themselves. When he would take over, they thought, Rome. The focus of Jesus was becoming a person of character. The only thing, do you ever think about this? The only thing you'll take into heaven is who you are. The only thing you'll take into heaven is who you are. If you're not a Christian, a follower of Christ, the only thing you'll take into hell is who you are. So the question is, who are you becoming? That's the refocus. A constant refocus on who you are. Jesus said it this way one time, seek first the kingdom of God. What is that? Well, the kingdom is anywhere he rules. And so he said, let me always refocus. Am I allowing him to rule my life? See, the Pharisees had great knowledge. They knew the law backward and forward. And they were very impressive with what they knew. But you know what Jesus said about them? Unless your righteousness becomes greater than the scribes and Pharisees, you will never see the kingdom of God. You can get a lot of knowledge about God. Discipleship is not just about knowledge in your head. It's a refocus, a transformation, becoming someone in who you are as a person. Because the reason why this is so important is the only thing you take with you into heaven is who you have become. And that starts with those that are not believers, of becoming a believer, becoming a follower of Jesus. It's becoming then in character. It's becoming like Christ. It's all about becoming. And what you'll take into heaven is who you have become. And we work on refocusing that till the day heaven opens its door to us and we leave this life. Number one, refocus on the right things of life. Because that's what you're going to take with you. Number two, refocus on the cost of discipleship. We don't talk a whole lot about this. And sometimes we forget the cost because we treat grace as a license. So Jesus said to them, you don't know what you're asking. You don't know what you're asking. You don't know the cost of this. You don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup? When he's talking about the cup, he's talking about the cross. He's talking about the suffering. He's talking about what it's going to cost him. Are you able to take that cup? And they said, yeah. They had no clue of what they were saying. They had really not counted the cost. I don't know if you're familiar with Dietrich Bonhoeffer. If you want to read a good book sometime, read his book called The Cost of Discipleship. The Cost of Discipleship. He lived during the days of Germany and the Nazi regime, and he was doing everything he could to help overthrow Hitler and the Nazi regime. And later he was thrown in prison. In fact, he came back to New York to teach there, and he said, no, I've made a mistake by coming back here. I need to go back to Germany, knowing the cost that would be there. And he did go back, and he kept working kind of underground to some way see that whole regime overthrown. Well, because of that, he ended up in prison. But he continued to write. He began to teach. He continued to teach in prison. He did not stop refocusing on becoming. The sad thing, I think, about this, as I read about his life, is that he was stripped of all his clothes, taken out to the gallows, and hanged until death. And only a few days later, the regime was overthrown. If some way he could have darted around the gallows just a few more days, he'd have been set free. And as they talk about him going to the gallows, he prayed and very calm, because he knew his life was in God's hands. Now here's one, there's a lot of great statements that he made, but here's one. He said, cheap grace, look at it on, cheap grace is grace without discipleship, grace without the cross. I want to give you time to write that down. Cheap grace is grace without discipleship, and without the call, the cross. The cross means there is a cross there. Probably the thing that is killing, and I'm saying killing, Christianity in America is comfort more than the cross. Did you realize that Christianity is declining in the United States? Does that have any concern for you? It alarms me. And yet I know how it is growing rapidly in Latin America, in Asia, in many places. In fact, in one of the fastest growing places of Christianity right now is in Iran. Isn't that interesting? Those people know the risk. I was talking to a guy this week, told me that he travels to China in the past and on business, and they were in a room, and there was all kinds of Chinese language on the board, but he said right in the middle there was a cross. And he asked, I said, what is that? And they quickly were alarmed when he asked about it, and they went up and erased it. Oh, no. And he said, no, I'd like to know what that is. And he said, well, that was left here from this weekend because we have church in here on Sunday. But no one knows. We have to meet secretly. There's a cost. And that is where Christianity is growing the most. So do you have that written down? Grace. Cheap grace is grace without discipleship, without a cross. Now look at Luke chapter 9, verse 23, and what Jesus said. Anyone who wants to follow me must put aside his own desires and convenience. This convenience thing is what is really catching up with us. And their convenience to carry the cross with him every day. In other words, there's a refocus every day, and keep close to me. I think we understand that in athletics. people will pay a great price as an athletic in most any sport. And they'll pay a great price because they want to win. They want to win. And I remember playing basketball. We had some coaches that were really tough on us because they wanted to bring out the very best in us. They weren't thinking about our comfort or convenience, I'll guarantee you that. They wanted to, for us to become a great player. Jesus wants you to become a person of great character. Because that is what you are going to take from this life into the next. So to develop, let's go on to verse 38. And they said to him, this is another ridiculous statement. They said, yeah, we're able to take up that cup. And Jesus said to them, the cup that I drank, you will drink. They didn't even know what he was talking about then. And with the baptism, same thing. He's talking about the baptism he's going to be plunged into, this death, which I am baptized, you will be baptized. In other words, he was trying to let them know that it was going to cost their life. It was going to cost their life. And indeed it did. As followers, as early followers, it cost them their life. Now, does that sound real dismal to you? Does it sound like I'm on a negative? You know, I thought my dad was kind of negative. Do you ever think your parents were tough on you? I always thought my dad is tough on me. Why was he doing that? He wanted to bring the best out of me. And he was tough on me. I remember one time my pastor, when I was growing up, and I surrendered to the minister under, he and my dad would take walks together and talk. And my pastor was so tough on me that dad said, you know, why is it you're so tough on Vernon? And he said, let me tell you, when he goes in the ministry like God's called him to, he's going to face a lot of challenges. He needs to be toughened up. And they walked along, and my pastor told me about this later. They walked along sometimes in silence. And then Dad turned to him and said, pour it on him. Pour it on him. Because each of them wanted to bring out the best in me. You need to be in a group that will confront you. You need to be in a group that will, some way, the ambition of that group is to draw out the very best of you. So number two is refocus on the cost. Not the convenience, not the comfort. That's a lot of what we focus on. How do we make this more comfortable? How do we make this more convenient? No, this time, this doesn't work out best for my time. This one doesn't work out best for my schedule. So what? It's not about the convenience. It's not about comfort. Jesus is wanting to bring out the best in you. Number three, refocus your heart on serving. I want you to see the next verse here. Verse 41. Well, the other 10 followers of Jesus were around when James and John asked this ridiculous favor. And it made them angry. And it said when the 10 heard it, they began to be indignant toward James and John. In other words, they were angry about that. The point here is that discipleship is not a Lone Ranger thing for me. And that's what James and John had begun to look at. What's in this for me? I'm looking for what is that in for me? And Jesus said, you got the wrong point here. It's not about you. It's about what you in a group can do for others there. And so this selfishness began to cause a division among them. And Jesus kind of called them together and said, okay, guys, cool it off. Chill out, chill out, chill out. And then the next part of the verse, it said in verse 32, and Jesus called them to him and said to them, and I just kind of threw in the chill out because that's kind of what he was doing there. Chill out, guys. You know that those who are considered rulers in the Gentiles. Let me tell you how the Gentiles behave. Let me tell you how the Gentiles look at this. They lord it over people. They look for power to lord it over people. And their great ones exercise authority over them. Because you guys are focusing on the way the Romans operate, the way the Gentiles operate. And that's not to be among you. Look at the next verse 43. But you, it is, you shall not be, that shall not be among you. That's not the way you're to act. But whoever wants to be great, I found that fascinating. Whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant. Did you notice he did not rebuke them? He did not say, guys, you are ridiculous. You're crazy. He did not put them down. What does he do? He takes them and says, sit down, guys. I want you to chill out here. You're looking at the wrong thing. But he did not reprimand them. What he really did was, he said, okay, let me explain to you what it takes to be great. I want to bring greatness out of you. I want you to be great, but I want you to understand what it means to be great. And here's what it means to be great. And then he focuses on two things. This is not be among you. That's not the right thing. But whoever wants to be my follower, two things, look at them. One is servant. And one is slave. Verse 44. And whoever would be first among you must be your slave. Before that, he says, whoever wants to be great, be your servant. Servant is the word diakonos, which you might have heard before. Sometimes translated as minister. Sometimes servant, sometimes deacon. It means to serve. It means to serve tables. It means to serve somebody else. Robert Greenleaf, back in the 70s, coined a phrase that's still used in universities today and businesses today, servant leadership, servanthood leadership. And then it was published in a book. And businesses still talk about servanthood leadership. In other words, the essence of that was to focus on the growth and the well-being of the people. Now, that was not original with Greenleaf. It was original with Jesus. You focus on the growth and well-being of those around you. It's not on power. It's not having a position. It's about servanthood. That's the reason why that we continually challenge you to find your ministry. God did not call you and you become one of his disciples to do nothing. He wants to develop you. And the greatest way to develop is not just in Bible study, but it's also, you have to couple with that, it's kind of like the way you grow and healthy. You eat the right food and you exercise. And we have to eat the right food of the Scripture and digest it, and then we have to exercise. And exercise sometimes is uncomfortable. In fact, most of the time, if your exercise is not bringing a little bit of discomfort, you're probably not exercising strong enough. So how are you exercising? As a disciple, discipleship is about exercising, doing something, taking on a responsibility, one that will challenge you, the one that will push you outside of your comfort zone. Any of you ever have a personal trainer? You know, they will push you sometimes to the limit because they're trying to bring out the best in you. They're trying to get you to become. So have you found your ministry? Do you know your spiritual gift? If I'd have asked you this morning, do you know what your spiritual gift is? Are you using that spiritual gift? See, what we look at so many times, we look at discipleship as a kind of a Lone Ranger thing. I have a quiet time of the morning, I have a Bible study and those kind of things. But unless that is united in some way, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens in this gathering, in a group, as Timothy says over and over. It's pursuing Jesus together. It's a united thing, not a Lone Ranger thing. And then when he says in verse 44, and whoever wants to be first among you must be your slave. Slave there just simply means that you're owned by another. Now you're a slave, you're owned. You're not your own. You're owned by Jesus. You belong to him. Your body belongs to him. Your body's not just to do anything you want to with. Your body belongs to him. Every part of you belongs to him. We are a temple of the Holy Spirit, and we belong to him. And we need to continue to refocus to make sure that we're yielding to him that belongs to us. How would you describe a strong church? How many show up on Sunday? No. How many have a great talent? No. I used to have an image of Jesus that I'd cut up in parts with Velcro on it. And at a group, I'd have those on a table. And I'd say, why don't you go over there and take some of those parts and just slap them on the board however you would like. And then look at that and I'd say, do you have any idea what that is? And they said, well, I think it's a person. Well, he doesn't look very good, does he? Because they just slapped them. What I found out very interesting was, is those that ended up with the feet would never put them at the bottom. They'd always put them toward the top. Because no one wanted to have the feet. They wanted them. God may have created you to be a foot. He may have created you to be a hand. He may have created you to be a voice. He may have created you to be an eye. He may have created you to be an ear. I don't know how he's created you, but he's created you in a way with a gift to use. What is that? What is that? Now the next question, are you using that? See, focus your heart on serving, because that is the way that you will become. It's more than sitting in a class to gain more knowledge. You've got to exercise that of who God has made you to be. One last thing. Refocus on following the example of Jesus. Jesus gave us a great example to follow. Look in verse 45. For even the Son of Man did not come to serve, be served, but to serve. There's our example. And he gave his life for a ransom for many. One of the last lessons that Jesus taught his disciples before he went to the cross was they were in the upper room. And the custom of those days, they wear sandals and they walk across the roads that were dusty, and they've always come into a house that their feet were dirty. And they didn't sit in chairs, they sat on the floor with feet. And you might, as you sat there to eat a meal sitting down, somebody else's feet might be right in front of you. Not too appetizing. So the washing of feet was extremely important. And there was usually a lowly slave of sorts that'd be there at the door washing the feet of those that came in. Jesus noticed that they had come in and no one had washed feet. They had still had dirty feet. And he got up, went over and wrapped a towel around him and poured water in a basin and started going around. And I can imagine it just came to hush, hush, hush. Here's their master. And now he begins to wash their feet. And when he gets through with that, he said, "Do you understand what I have done? Do you understand what I have done? Now I want you to go and do likewise." That doesn't mean that next Sunday we'll come and wash your feet. Please do that before you come. No, he's saying, be humble enough to serve someone, even if it's taking a lowly job of washing their feet. This example is his last lesson before he left. The ambition of Jesus was to help them constantly refocus on becoming. If you're here and you've never trusted Christ, discipleship is first of all helping you become a follower of Jesus. Most of you have already would say, "Yes, I have made that step to follow Jesus." Now, it is becoming your next step. Always refocus on the next step. What is your next step in becoming? What is Jesus wanting to help you become? I would hope that on every service in the journal, that you could write down a closing statement here. Here is one step I'm going to take this week to become more like Jesus, to become more of what he wants me to be. See, I think a lot of times we leave a service like this. We've enjoyed the music, we enjoyed the fellowship, and enjoyed the coffee, and enjoyed all of this. But are you becoming something different than when you came in? Can you leave today saying, "Jesus, what am I going to become from this?" And take that with you. Because who you become, life is sort of a training ground, see? Training for the next life. And it's always a refocusing job, because all that you will take with you is you. The question is who are you becoming? That is discipleship. Would you pray with me? Lord, forgive us for the times that we seek comfort more than character, that we seek convenience more than facing up to the cost, for the times that we get excited about what we've learned but then fail to do anything with it and let it develop our character. And I'm praying right now that each one of us here might think about, how do we become more of what you want us to be? What is that? Let us stop for just a moment and say, "God, take my life and let it be consecrated. Take everything that I am. Take my voice. Take my will. Take whatever it is to help me become more than I am now. For Christ's sake."